Okay, hello once again, and welcome back to another 3 hours of unique and provocative information and discovery here for you. 3 hours a night, 6 nights a week, coast to coast on radio stations, and of course on the internet live around the world. Remember, all of our programs are archived for you. You can hear them anytime at all. Just go to the home page and you're set. Just click on the show you'd like to hear and you may hear it. Tonight, a return visit with, without doubt, one of the most enigmatic, talented, gifted, and unique people we have ever had the pleasure to have on this program in the nearly 6 years I've been doing it now. He is Ingo Swann, and just about a month ago, Ingo visited for a couple of hours here and was so provocative and unique. I asked him if he'd come back and do it again, and he said yes, so he's back tonight. For those of you who may not know much about Ingo Swann, I'm going to tell you so you'll have an idea. His new book, entitled Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy, is out and available now. We're going to tell you how to get that tonight. We'll touch on that book a little bit tonight. We talked about it quite a bit last time. It is an incredibly remarkable book. Extraterrestrials, telepathy, Earthside and Spaceside visits to the moon, ultra-super-secret UFO activities and cover-ups, just some of the things touched upon and revealed in the book by Ingo. He is a man, again, of unique talent, as I said. He is currently spending much time doing his beloved artwork. He lives in New York City, so we are going to be joining him live in New York in just a few moments after I tell you a bit more about my guest tonight. And for those of you who heard this last time, listen again, because it's even more remarkable the second time around. Science itself felt a small ripple when, in 1973, parapsychologist Dr. Gertrude Schmeidler reported the extraordinary success, the first of its kind ever, of a mind-over-matter experiment. Ingo Swann, using only his mind, repeatedly had been able to cause controlled temperature changes in a sealed, distant vacuum. It could now be seen that the human mind was capable of extending its powers beyond the confines of the brain. And these are some magazine quotes. Time, 4/23/1973, in April, wondered if Ingo Swann's powers were more dangerous than the atomic bomb. Now think about that. The Smithsonian, in June of 73, speculated on the source of Swann's talents when it reported that at Stanford University he had, quote, apparently altered the performance of a deeply buried, heavily shielded magnetometer for 30-second periods through the use of PK, psychokinesis. And by then, quote, looking into the device and describing its very mechanism, end quote. Horizon Magazine, winter of 1974, Time, March of 74, and Newsweek, March of 74, both the very same week, surmised that Ingo Swann's confirmed PK and clairvoyant powers required a rethinking concerning the importance of psychic giftedness. After 1974, Swann's participation in research became more vigorous. He became an intensively studied, as he calls it, guinea pig at the famous, legendary think tank, Stanford Research Institute, and he worked with dozens of other researchers in the U.S. and Europe at that time. John Wilhelm, in his 1976 book, The Search for Superman, indicated that Ingo Swann flies straight out of Star Maker. His results are remarkable. In Germany, Esoterra, December 12, 1976, termed Ingo Swann the foremost super psychic of psi research in America. Reader's Digest, 1977, said that recent research confirmed that Ingo Swann, in remote viewing experiments, could go to any spot on the globe and sketch correctly roads and buildings just as they are at that point. McCall's, 1977, wondered if Swann's abilities could be used for psychic spying. We'll talk about that tonight. As did the San Francisco Examiner and the Washington Post, as well as columnist Jack Anderson writing about the ESP gap at that time, at the height of the Cold War, between the U.S. and Russia, the Soviet Union. New Times in 1978 said that Swann had become a psychic super weapon. Imagine being referred to in the national media as a psychic superweapon. 1978, November, Ingo was the featured banquet speaker at the annual meeting of the U.S. Army Material Systems Analysis Activity. After 78, although extensive publicity continued internationally, Swan's ongoing work became shrouded in a cloak of secrecy. In 1987, Ingo reemerged from behind the psi curtain, so to speak, to publish Natural ESP, A Layman's Guide to Unlocking the Extrasensory Powers of the Mind. His new book, again, Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy, is now available. And you can find that book on my homepage. Just look for the actual banner. I put up a special banner there. We have been given permission to extract a small excerpt from the book. You can read it and get the idea. The order information is there. We will give it to you directly as we continue tonight. Do visit the homepage at sightings.com. All sorts of new material up there for you, as is the case every day. Handpicked by yours truly and put up there by my unparalleled and gifted webmaster, James Neff. And now, with all of that said, let us welcome our friend back live from New York and his flat, Mr. Ingo Swan. Welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be back. I'm still around.
Well, and I am, for one and many listening in, agree that that's a grand development. Let us right now, Ingo, put the phone number up there for the book. And let me preface the phone number information by saying that this book, of course, was headed for big-time publication until they saw the manuscript. Tell us.
Everybody turned it down.
After being almost rabid with enthusiasm in more than one case.
Yes. I actually have two letters from editors of publishing houses that turned it down saying, this is a wonderful book, it's going to make great money, but it's not for us. And I've never quite been able to unravel that one. So after a few years have passed, I decided to publish it myself. It's sort of stupid just to have unpublished manuscripts sitting around on your shelf.
Somebody said that once, or was it a bumper sticker? I forget. See the darndest things on bumper stickers. Okay, let's tell the folks the phone number to order. This is a self-published book, which again, and I think you folks can add two and two here and figure out why the book wasn't picked up and followed through with by the majors. They were obviously told, or it was suggested to them, that it might be best that they not do that, because this book touches on some very profoundly interesting issues. The number, Ingo?
1-888-453-4046, and it's a toll-free number.
This is a book that you will want in your library. And believe me, those of you who heard the last edition of our conversations with Ingo will tell you that this is a great one. It is intriguing, it is mind-boggling, and it raises questions that quite clearly may give us a real glimpse at the stakes of this grand game that is underway on this planet and others. Involving us folks and them folks. And them folks has the telepathy sort of down, and we're kind of in the dark reaching out for it, most of us at any rate. What was the reaction of the last show, Ingo? Did you get much from folks? Did you talk to people?
Well, yes. Everybody was very kind and said I did really good. Which is always nice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And many people, you know, when I wrote the book, I didn't mean to make it a thriller. But most people say when they started, they can't put it down. People will come in and said, I had to stay up all night reading this book. I couldn't put it down. And I think that's nice. I like, you know, it's nice for an author to hear that.
That's wonderful. Now, you are, of course, an artist. And Ingo has an award-winning website on the net, too. I want to give you the address for that right now. It is the usual three W's, and we have a dot then, and it is BioMind Superpowers. That's all one word. biomindsuperpowers.com, and it'll take you right there. You'll see examples of Ingo's work and little bits of information about the book Penetration and other things, many other things on the site to take a look at. Ingo is not a remote viewer who teaches remote viewing, as many do nowadays. He was in on the beginning of this thing. You know, we talked about that briefly last time, Ingo, and people who are interested in remote viewing and the developing of their psi potentials are often... they jump into these things quickly without understanding the real dynamics of it. What is your advice? What would you tell people who are thinking about becoming remote viewers and enrolling in some of these courses?
Well, I don't give advice. I found out I shouldn't do that a long time ago. But, you know, in our nation, we're so used to weekend seminars of self-help kind, and in many cases, these are really wonderful things. But the basis for psychic abilities is very involved and strikes really deep. And actually, you can't get much done in a short period of time, so you have to...
It does take a long time. With that music, we're going to come to our first break and come right back to Ingo Swann. I'm Jeff Rentz, Coast to Coast, and the website is sightings.com. You will see again a banner for Ingo's book and a little extract from it. Now feel free to go by, browse, and read it, and we'll continue in about 3 minutes. Okay, and we are coming back at you with my guest Ingo Swann tonight, his new book, Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And for those of you able to get online and who are visiting his website now, I've seen already that it's a great one. It's an award winner, and there is just a ton of fascinating material on there. So without giving advice, Ingo, but just a general lightweight commentary on the idea of becoming a weekend psychic warrior and taking a course or two, is that it is something that that doesn't necessarily fit easily into that configuration.
Well, certain aspects of it do. It's always interesting to learn a bit more about something, but...
I like that. That's another great statement.
You have to really go to some length and shuffle around your own fixed ideas about how this kind of stuff works, and this takes time. Actually, it's you know, if you were to do a two-year course in a college, it would be about that kind of a thing, because you should know a great deal about psychic research and what's gone on before and things. You know, it's a serious field.
Mm-hmm. It would seem to me the average person endeavoring to acquaint him or herself with that and to learn how to do it would be coming to, I guess, at some point or another, a point of trying to decide what purpose, to what use. And it would seem to me the general purpose of learning this would be to better understand the actual potential and mechanism of the human mind and how it interrelates and interacts with the cosmos, rather than being able to pick stocks and horses and so forth.
Well,
one would think.
You're right on all accounts there. It would be nice to pick stocks and win horses, too.
Now, there have been people who have claimed with RV and Psi that they've been able to do pretty well at that on occasion.
Well, I don't know of any billionaires yet.
No, I haven't seen anyone. A billionaire after their name, you're right.
Not even me.
No.
But it's certainly, you know, it's I've had a few students in the past, and when they find out that their systems of perception don't stop with their five physical senses, but you can access things from distances and things like that, this changes their life at some very fundamental level, you know. The people that know a great deal about this are American Indians. They have a rich heritage in this kind of thing, and it's part of their culture, and it's sort of accepted. But for us Americans, you know, even, you know, I had certain kinds of natural abilities, but when I found out they could be sort of brought under conscious control, this was a great revelation to me, and it really altered one's, my view of, I don't know, shall we say cosmic reality or the bigger picture of what a human being consists of.
We've had Dean Radin on the program a couple of times in the past, and he made some very interesting disclosures, not for the first time, but certainly on radio, I think, for the first time, with a random number generator test, which are really old hat to you and very simple, but nonetheless fascinating to people, I think, and we should touch upon those briefly, because when the mass understands that they do have an ability to think, work psychically in unison and create effective outcomes, it's quite an empowering thing, and I'm not quite sure that the governing structures would like people to know that. But tell us a little bit about Dean's work, if you would.
Well, he's been working for a long time in very many different aspects, but one of the recent things that he did was he showed that people could know what's in a letter before they opened it, in a way. It's a very sort of complicated to say how they went about it, but they could tell if the letter had really negative connotations or very positive connotations, and he really did a very nice, thorough experimental setup here, so that it was unquestionable that people have certain kinds of sensitivities along those lines. Excuse me, I have to cough for some reason.
All right. There's a lot of coughing going on in this country, coast to coast.
And so this is done from an emotional level, sort of an autonomic response level, and that experiment that he did was really quite excellent. In fact, I reviewed it in my website.
It is up here, and I noticed it.
I forget where I put it now, but
Section 8, you know,
probably,
which used to have a negative connotation in itself. Section 8 military. Wasn't a Section 8 some kind of a discharge? I forget.
Section 8 is...
Remember?
Well, I have 10 sections in my website.
Yes, well, this is Section 8. Now, that's not to say that Dean determined that people were able to pick up an envelope, look at it, and see IRS on there, and know it was a negative sort of communication. It was a little more sophisticated than that.
He used photographs of gross photographs or pleasurable photographs or things like that, and... And a number of people that tried this, and the outcome was really quite something. But it has to be specified that these were emotional type of targets and responses, not analytical ones like numbers and horse races and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of information appears to require a whole different set of psychic synapses, if we can say synapse, psychic synapses. And,
sure. Makes sense.
Not very many people ever develop those.
So that's interesting. So the emotional sensitivities, as it were, of incoming mail can be used to determine good and bad news. Okay. Would this be something for our listeners that would involve the sitting of an envelope on a desk in front of you? You can read this if you're online, by the way, the actual setup and basics of the experiment.
Well, I think Dean Radin has a website, too. He probably has the whole document there, all of his research reports.
We asked him to come back on the program, and he's sort of burned out on radio.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. No. We'll get him back at some point, but he got to be kind of a hot item, and then he backed away from it.
It's too bad because, you know, if he would be the best one to explain how this experiment was set up. And actually, it's really a thrilling.
Very good. All right, hold on. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. And by the way, if you'd like to call in tonight and exercise your option to talk to one of the most unusual people in America, Ingo Swann, you can do that a bit later. Our new phone number is 800-850-5043. And we'll be right back. Once again, the book is called Penetration, the Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy and the Interface Therein. And it is an interface that is at once fascinating and alarming. It's a great book. It's well worth your read. 1-888-453-4046 is the toll-free order number. You can read an extract of it on my website. You can go to Ingo's at biomindsuperpowers.com. And check it out there as well. Many fascinating things on your website, my friend. There's one that I like, and it has easily another one of the most bizarre pieces of art you'll ever want to see at the top of the page. Section 5, titled, this is so much fun for those of you who can get to the site to read through this. It's called Distractions, Deterrents, Derailments, Demolitions, Deconstructions, Pismires, and Droolings Regarding Fuller Understanding of the Superpowers of the Human Biomind. And there is a painting there, or it's a black and white, pen and ink, whatever it is. It's a strange one by James Harter.
Yeah.
Called War Game. Where did you find that one?
Well, Jim Harter is a very good friend of mine. He's an artist.
Looks as if he may have done the cover on your book.
Oh, he did, yes. He specializes in a number of kinds of art, but one is making collages out of 19th century engravings. And that one, I've used two or three of his collages in my website. They're all in black and white, of course, so they're easy to reproduce. But they're so much fun. They're a lot of fun, and I think it's wonderful. And I had another cover planned for Penetration, but one day I was walking down the street, and my voice sort of spoke, says, "Oh no, don't use that. Use that particular one by Jim Harter. It'll go fine." So.
No, it's
if I could, and he said, "Sure."
It's an eye catcher, no doubt. Section 5 is a little introduction written by my guest Ingo Swann. Welcome to this database regarding superpowers of the human biomind. When this database is completed ahead in time, it will contain all of the novel concepts and factors which have so far been discovered to be meaningful for a broader understanding of the superpowers. The superpowers of the human biomind are essentially defined as those inherent faculties of our species which transcend time, matter, energy, and space in terms of awareness, consciousness, and phenomena which are more subtle and elusive. The transcending can be subconscious, subliminal, or conscious, or perhaps superconscious. The idea of time is so limiting. We are always dealing with time. Up in the morning, to bed at night, the clock, time. Have you gotten to a point in life, Inga, where you're able to step away from that paradigm and live in another reality when you wish?
Well, in 1959, I got tired of looking at clocks and watches, and I've never worn a watch since, and I have only one clock in my house, which does the heating system for me. And that's the one I look at if I need to know sort of what time it is.
Or you just call Mr. Axelrod and ask him.
No, I mean, things get down, you know, I don't know. People that are really busy need watches and clocks and things, but I sort of did my life really without them to the degree that most people have them anyway.
That's unique. It's almost doing your life without TV anymore.
I stopped watching TV about 6 years ago.
That's about the same time I did.
Yeah?
That's true. I never really watched it. I didn't have the time, but I began realizing the profound damage that the medium had done to so many people worldwide, especially in this nation. I mean, there are some good things on television, don't get me wrong, folks, but when you see people staring at it, you begin to understand that they're no longer with us. They're in an altered state. And in that altered state, in many cases, they're unable to discern or discriminate what's going in. It just pours in.
Yeah.
And when you see young people, children these days, growing up to the age of 10, 12, 14, and no more than the sum of their input, which has been television for the most part, who are they? Take it away from them, and there's nobody home in many cases. They are rock music. They are image. They are product. They are what their peers insist that they be. And woe unto the child who is truly different and doesn't watch television because they are often henpecked. That's a strange thing, television, Ingo. When you look at it and contemplate it, what do you come away with, though? Is it the most devastating tool that has ever been unleashed upon humankind?
Oh, I don't know about that. There's a lot of things like that. I had to stop watching it because I just couldn't take the sensory overload, you know, in the 50s. I'm telling you how old I am already.
Yeah, you're timeless. Let's leave.
Lower, and you didn't get bombarded every 7 seconds with a high-impact visual image.
Well, you could understand like Ozzy and Harriet when they were talking.
Well, I never liked them either, but I just couldn't take it anymore, and so I stopped. And what I use my TV thing for is I go rent movies and watch those, but I can pick and choose and so forth.
Yeah, well, maintain control that way. You don't have that remote in your hand, and I've seen, gosh, we've all seen it, and we've probably all done it. You sit there and you look, and you can press that button, and there are over 100 channels in many cases. You can keep pressing it until the mind finds something that it enjoys. It's a drug of sorts. And the pacing, you couldn't be more correct. I know when I turned it off and pulled the cable was when I sat down with a paper and pencil and watched, especially Saturday morning children's programming, with the 30-second commercials. And in that 30-second commercial, you're an artist. The intensity of mental and sensory amphetamine-like stimulation was awesome. These little kids are watching a 30-second commercial with often over 50 different scenes with moving cameras, zoom shots, reverse zooms, sound cutting in and out. I couldn't believe it.
I don't know if it's all bad or not. It's definitely creating a new format of consciousness.
It's a pacing, and it's a speed, isn't it? And when they all get on that hyper level of sensory expectation, and you take it away from them and sit them down and urge them to be quiet and spend quiet time, it doesn't work in many cases.
Well, when I was a kid, I read 3 to 9 books a week. I mean, you could say that's the equivalent in a certain way. But still, I don't know. I think that people are going to be victims of something. You know, most people are victims of something in our society, even if it's society itself. And
most people are victims of something. That's an interesting comment.
Well, they're fashion victims, they're automobile victims, you know, they're status trophy victims, they're money-making victims and things like this. I think life should be done along those lines there. But the ones that are going to pull up out of it, I think that mostly they do so at some point and get on with their own life rather than the life that's being designed for them around them.
And boy, do we hear people talking about how victimized they are. It's not my fault. No one's accountable anymore.
Well, in my website, I make the point. I think, we're the Western society is based very much on individuality, and if there's anything wrong with you, it's your own fault because you're an individual and you should be able to correct it. But I don't think that's true. I think a lot of us are just victims for things around us, and we don't really realize it.
Many don't. True. We're going to pause, come right back, talk a bit about the book Penetration and about what's really on the moon. It's not just rocks and sand either. And we'll be back. All right. Okay, we're back and talking with Ingo Swann. And Ingo, I guess it was about 1980, basically withdrew from public exposure. And kind of got involved with other things. What did you do from 1980 to tonight, Ingo? Actually, we're on a few weeks ago. What were you doing all those years besides your artwork?
About 1977, all the work I was doing got classified, so I couldn't talk about it, and really still can't. And when I retired from all that in 1989, I just sat back to write books and, you know, and sort of do the things I wanted to do. And although I eventually published 6 books, I have about 7 that nobody would publish. So I'm sort of working on those to get them sort of in print at least.
Well, we'll get this one out there. Again, the number to call is 888-453-4046. And if you want to read an extract from it, you can go right to sightings.com and look for the Penetration banner on the front of it. The book deals with many fascinating things, as we talked about last time. The moon being certainly one of the most fascinating. There is a lot of talk on the net, and for those of you who weren't with us before, with Ingo, there is talk on the net about the moon being an artificial satellite to the extent that it wasn't originally here. It was sort of transported or brought here, if you want to think towed here, whatever. There is talk about the moon being not solid. There is talk about mining operations on the moon. There is talk about why our Apollo astronauts ended their missions, and there was no follow-through when all that talk in the late 50s and 60s was about getting to the moon to colonize it, to mine it, and develop it. Let's start with a general overview of the moon, Ingo, and what about the moon got you intrigued with remote viewing it in the first place? How did that happen?
Well, I was asked by some very mysterious people to do some remote viewing sessions about the moon, and they volunteered to pay me money, actually. Most of the work I ever got involved in hardly paid anything, you know. So I said, sure, I'd do it, and then in this remote viewing sessions, viewed some things on the moon that I thought were really outrageously strange, like people there and big structures and lots of activity and things like that. And
this would have been after the Apollo missions or during?
Yes, it was in, I think it started in 75 and went into 1976, and was asked to have a 10-year confidentiality mm-hmm. thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole series of events that took place because of this sort of innocent remote viewing of the moon really were, to me, quite shocking, and I was glad to forget about the whole thing until in about 1990-91 I realized I was starting to forget certain aspects of it, so I wrote it all down. And that led in my literary agent then said, oh, this is going to make a great book. And when she tried to sell it, nobody would pick it up and publish it. Because it contains several concepts that are very embarrassing, I think, to, the mainstream powers that be.
Give us an idea of an embarrassing concept.
Well, we've been taught many years that the moon was a dead place. There was no water, no air, no nothing, you know. I saw air there, at least. I don't think I commented on water on the moon, but it's only in the last 2 years that science has finally admitted that there is water and an atmosphere on the moon. But back in the 60s, this was denied. You know, everybody was taught to believe that it was a dead, airless a satellite of Earth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then even some of the NASA scientific missions there sort of discovered a number of things, like analysis of moon rocks suggests that they're about at least a half a billion years older than Earth is itself. So there is, if that would be true, and they think that that is true, then there's a question where the moon came from, and it would not be a natural satellite of Earth. And then the density of the moon is far less than would be expected if it was a solid satellite, so that means that it's probably got a lot of hollow cavities in it. And even Carl Sagan printed a statement way back when that a natural satellite cannot be hollow, and if the satellite's hollow, that means it's not natural, and no real scientist said it's a created or man-made type of thing, but mm-hmm. that's a direct implication there. And if you don't know much about the moon, and you don't know much about ETs and things like that, then none of this makes any sense. But if you know more and more and more about it, then a whole bigger picture begins to unfold. You really can't avoid it anymore. There is an issue of why the Soviet Union and the United States did not go back to the moon in the 70s when they spent all this money getting there to colonize it.
So they sort of abruptly stopped, and that has been one issue that has not been questioned by the general public very much. And
well, I mean, the general public doesn't really know enough. You know, everybody was diverted to space platforms and things like that.
Yeah.
But the moon didn't. We didn't go back to the moon. And then there's the matter of the complete lack of high-resolution photography about the moon. This should be, you know, as we mentioned before, if you've seen the movie, it's still in circulation right now, called Enemy of the State. You know what? You find out what high-resolution photography is from satellites that are between 400 to 1,000 miles up in the sky, right? They can read gum wrappers in the gutter here in New York. And there's no photographic evidence of the moon along these lines at all. You can't find it anywhere. And that's completely outrageous, because even in the 70s and 60s, they had really good
offices. Even in the 70s and 60s.
Right.
Okay. That's another one of those glaring issues that people
glaring
just
issue.
Don't seem to take by the horns and address. The Clementine Mission. By the way, all of this is addressed in Ingo's book in fascinating detail with an incredible storyline carrying it right along. Penetration is the name of the book. Clementine, sent up by the U.S. Navy, apparently.
Army.
Excuse me, the Army?
Army, yeah.
That came across as a Navy project for some reason in the beginning. But
well,
not,
it's an Army project.
Nonetheless.
It's not even a NASA project. It's
no.
An Army project.
The militarization of space continues, folks. It went up there and apparently photographed the entire moon with great detail, or much of it.
Most of it, anyway. And it was loaded with different kinds of cameras, you know. Then it came back, and I read in the New York Times where they were promising us high-resolution photographs of the moon, but none have ever been released to this date. None.
We have a similar situation, a parallel situation, with the Mars Global Surveyor and other Mars probes, which have apparently had the ability to take some pretty high-res, snazzy photos, and we haven't seen many of them. We've seen kind of blurry things here and there. What's your feeling about that?
There can only be one reason to withhold high-resolution photographs of the Moon and of Mars, because they reveal things that would probably cause us to have to re-identify our position in the universe, if you get what I mean.
There's another one of those statements, folks. Yes, causes us to re-identify our position in the universe. In other words, quite clearly, if high-res pictures were made freely available of the Moon and of Mars at random, random items would pop up that would create some real public relations difficulties, shall we say.
Well, it could create some philosophical ones, too.
Could indeed, and could create great bonanzas and new awareness and all the rest.
I'm not the first to imply that we're not alone in the universe. There was a great book written, I mentioned it in my book, by Walter Sullivan in 1964, and he based his observations on telescopic information and NASA photographs, you know, NASA information. And he wrote a book saying we're not alone. And then, of course, in the 70s, George Leonard wrote a book saying, entitled, We Discovered Alien Bases on the Moon. So, you know, I'm just a recent person along these lines here of trying to make these points here. I just did it from another viewpoint, which is, makes it a more intimate type of thing regarding us humans and ETs, and the connecting line, of course, is telepathic interaction with them.
Were those early books impetus for Mr. Axelrod and friends to get you to do some remote viewing of the moon? Something like that?
No, I don't know, because Mr. Axelrod was a very careful, regarded person, and he didn't tell me anything. He didn't really have to, you know. But I think that, scientists and government people have known that the moon is not what we're taught. And
you feel the Apollo astronauts are well aware of that, don't you?
Well, I don't want to outthink Apollo astronauts, you know. I mean, they do have difficulties about secrecy oaths and things like that. But good heavens, you know, I mean, in my book, I present not a whole lot of evidence, but the evidence I put there means that, there's just certain things that have to be the truth about the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that there's activity going on there, and it's not just natural activity. It's consciously, intellectually controlled activity.
And that's
just, I mean, the evidence along these lines is mountainous.
Indeed. All right, we're going to take our first hour break and come back. Your phone call is welcome if you'd like to call in and talk about any of these issues with Ingo Swann. A rare opportunity to do so, 1-800-850-5043. And on Ingo's website, Section 1, the Ingo Swann Database, another one of the great paintings by Jim Harder up there. And also, essay after essay by Ingo right on up to 1998, and four new essays up there from 98. Papers of merit, papers of worth, provocative papers for you to read and contemplate. And we're going to contemplate for the next 7 or 8 minutes and come back and spend hour number two with you. Don't forget our new phone number here at the Equity Radio Network is 800-850-5043.